हरिः ॐ सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहजीवन्तवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमाविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव हरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Yeah, I was just looking at the point that contact with the jiva. Okay. Sutta 2.2.11. The formation of the triple atom from single and double atoms is untenable. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar refutes the theories that atoms are dimensionless. Atoms must have a dimension. Otherwise, combining even infinite atoms of larger size could never form an effect since they would have no dimension. Hence, the theory that an atom is without dimension is invalid. Footnote 13. In other words, this theory takes one of the qualities of the Lord, that he is free from material designations, and imposes it artificially to a material object with the intention to avoid the conclusions that the Lord is the source of everything, right? Because that's the basis of all these philosophies. They're trying to avoid that there's God and he's in control and we're not God. Or even if he's there and he's in control, but he's doing it the way we like it, because as we see before us, why would these atoms go together? Is because of the karma of the jiva, right? This whole thing of proximity, they all seem to like this proximity kind of thing. Just by being next to something, you take on that. You know, it's just like I sit next to this water pot, and so I take on the qualities of hydration from the pot, even though I don't drink any water. Right? And then we find after a while the pot can give a class, you know, because it just takes on those qualities. Right? You know, it sounds very tenable, right? You know, so that's the basis of their theory. So when you get up to that esoterics, no one really looks at it logically. Right? Just like you take something practical in your life and look at it from a practical example outside of what you're applying. And it's so obvious what it should be, but then when you try to put it back into actually how you're using it, then again the illusion comes. Does that make sense? Yes.
Why would they say that the formation of atoms is because of jiva's karma?
Because pradana is homogeneous, right? The modes, everything like this, and so there's no need for that. But by the proximity with the jiva and their karma, and so since the jiva has to get their karma, then the atoms themselves naturally just form into everything, you know, for that karma. Now, there's a problem here, is that why does the jiva have karma and why would he have to experience his karma? That's not being defined. Because according to the jiva, if it was the jivas that were doing it, actually, everybody would just have good karma. Everybody would be king Indra. Right? You know, that's all. Everyone would be that. And each one would be trying to show how they're the better king Indra. Right? And so, you know, it's like everybody goes to a costume party and everybody shows up in the same costume, you know. So each one has to profile how they're better, you know. Yeah. So it would be like that, but it's not. You know, and why would it come out this way? The jivas have that ability to dream up something like this, you know, the material world and all, and whatever's the best that we consider of the material world. How do we even know it's there? Right? So that's the whole point. Why would any of this happen? Why would there be laws? Why would it have to be there? So that's, they're all leaving out that that's the Lord. But they, or even if they do accept the Lord, they don't want him to be contaminated, in their opinion, by having contact or any kind of connection with the material manifestation. Pradhan, okay, because it just sits there. Right? There's no fault. But when we get into the material manifestation, fault is seen. The temporariness, the misery, all these kind of things. So we don't want to attribute that to God, because if he somehow or another is in the room by association, then he gets all the blame. Right? You know, that's the point. You know, you go into the train station and the pickpocket, you know, takes something from your pocket, and so now everyone in the train station is culpable. You know, like that. So that kind of mentality, you can see, it's a natural mentality for the jiva, but it's not a very mature mentality. Right? So the whole thing is they want to save God from this, and so they don't understand how if he's everything, he is everything, but there's, because he has the three features of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, that's how it's separated. They try to separate, okay, there's God, because we don't really know that much about him, and then there's the material, and so somehow or another he creates it, because we know things are created, but they don't really explain where the elements come from, why they act the way they do, who's controlling them. All that's important is, okay, he created it, we're here, it's ours to deal with how we feel best. Of course, we're, you know, mature, God-conscious persons, so then we will come together with, you know, social systems that will benefit the world, you know, how you say, liberty, equity, fraternity, like this. And with that, then everything will go on in a very nice way. You know, and so God's there, we respect God. And all that, we have to be good. That's why we've come up with these modern, you know, kind of social systems, because we are God fearing people, right? We want to do the right thing. But what's missed out is that God actually has nothing to do with anything we're doing. It's we are the, how you say? Yeah, the champions, the writers, yeah, for our own destiny. We're, you know, like this. We're all these things. I mean, God, of course, is the ultimate, you know, just like you do everything in your house and all that, you know, you have to please your grandmother, you know, your mother, like this. But you're doing all the things there, but, you know, you keep in the back of your mind. Somebody said,
can we say much? That the Lord glances and there is the ego, the time, and the jivas?
Yes.
That's what we say.
Yes.
So the atoms would be the part of the 24 elements?
Yes, well, they're just, they don't put as much emphasis on the 24. They're just saying is that the earth, water, fire, and air, everything's built out of that. It may have these other aspects to it, but it's not as important for the philosophy. The main thing is the atoms come, everything's made out of atoms, the atoms come together, the atoms go apart. Because if you just break it down to that atomic theory, what's to get attached to? It's just a bunch of atoms. Right? I mean, the modern, they'll say it's just a bunch of chemicals. You know, so how to get it, so the idea is to become detached, so you become liberated, then, you know, it has its, you know, perspective. But the problem is that their liberation doesn't actually bring the jiva to a better position. They may not be involved in the material phenomena for a, you know, a temporary period of time, but it doesn't solve the actual problem of the jiva, that they're not doing their activities in connection with Krishna. Is that something that makes sense? So because of that, then there's going to be, it'll fail, their philosophy. You know, whether it'll even work in the first place, but it keeps them from being too materialistic. Mm-hmm. So that way it regulates their life, so it's better than being a hedon. Right?
So now the point it is missing for them, it is the Bhagavan aspect.
All of the six, the Bhagavan aspect is missing. To some degree, it's not that they're, only the atheist, the Kapila, is just like, he's not involved in the philosophy. Yes. From what I can see is the other ones, he's involved to some degree.
Yes.
But to what degree? But he'll always be deified.
Yes.
Because if he's deified, then that means we're the ones that call the shots. We've written the scripture. Means based on the scriptures, then our scripture has been written, right? So the Jaimini Sutras and the Kapila Sutras and all these kind of like this. So therefore, if there's any contradiction between the sutras and the Shastra, we take the sutras, right? That's the idea that these six schools are doing. But in Vaishnav, then we take the Shastra, and then the understanding of that is from our Acharyas. But never is there a point where we don't accept the Shastra. It just means we don't understand the Shastra. That's why we take shelter of the Acharya's, direction. Like that. So it's like they have the faith in Guru, but it's actually misplaced, because then it's, instead of Guru being the representative of God, Guru's all there is the main thing.
Yes.
It takes on that cultish aspect. So, except for Vaishnavism, you end up with cultish aspect. Mm-hmm. And even within it, when people start, they tend to be cultish.
Yes.
Until they mature. Then they drop the materialistic kind of perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
Then it starts to mature properly.
Yes.
Yes. So,
yes.
Yeah. Maharaj, can we say that Sankhya and Vaisheshika, they resemble some kind of similarity in the philosophy, because Sankhya speaks of the proximity of Purush and the Prakriti, whereas Vaisheshika speaks of the atoms, which is a detail or a specific of Prakriti itself.
Mm-hmm.
It speaks of the karma of the jivas. So again, if the Purush comes in the picture. So it's
No, it's the same. All these six will basically be the same. There's not going to be much difference in that. It's just where they emphasize.
Yes.
So instead of looking at the whole Prakriti and all 24 elements, they're just focusing on the atoms of four elements.
Yes.
And then with that, you consider how the others then connect. Like that. So it's not that each one will consider that the other one technically is wrong in the mechanical aspects. It's just that their specific goal, their specific, you know, methodology of applying, then there'll be some difference of opinion. But otherwise, basically, you have pure philosophy and you have materialistic philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Because as such, their philosophies is not much differing, you know?
No, there's not. But just like means that they're all of them are like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you'll see is Gotama and Kanada, those would be the most similar.
Mm-hmm.
Then Shankya and Yoga will be. Then Purva Mimamsa and Uttara Mimamsa. Those will be paired like that, but not that they don't also have similarities. Like the first four will also have more of a similarity.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because they only deal with parts of the Shastras that support their sutras.
Mm-hmm.
While Jaimini, he can deal with any sutra. So that's more similar to Vedanta.
Mm-hmm.
But the interpretation is always karma. Well, then the Vedanta will be, it's always Gyan.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like that.
Yes.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, so the first thing is that we're going to say is, why is the creation? Because the atoms, by proximity with the jivas and their karma, then it starts the creation. But they also define that the atom has no dimension. But if it has no dimension, then you can't make anything out of anything with dimension. If something has no dimension, and you put together even a lot of it, you still end up with a lot of nothing. Right? Like if I have an empty pot, and I bring a whole bunch of empty pots, doesn't matter how many I have, I'm still going to have nothing. Right? Lunch is still not going to happen. Right? You know, not even breakfast, right? Even if I have 20 empty boxes of cereal, I'll still not have any cereal.
But you can have something in your mind.
That's there. That's why they have their theory and they keep themselves busy. The idea is the living entity is inspiring himself in the material phenomena through imagination.
Yes.
So it's just a matter, is your imagination karma or is your imagination gyan?
Yes.
Or a combination?
Yes.
And in karma, is it pious according to the Shastra or it's impious?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's all. And then gyan is just a matter of, you know, how liberated or how much you're not there.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Are you kind of there, totally not there, you don't even exist not there? You know, like that. So they have their
choice.
Yeah, you have these various choices, yes.
Because all these philosophies are based on the mind, mental speculation.
All of them. Even karma is also based on every philosophy, every ideal is based on the mind. It's what they accept. It's just like you have six schools, and let's say you bring a whole bunch of people who are interested in bogus philosophy, right? And you have a conference, and then you have the six speakers speaking on each of the six schools. Having spoken, then the different persons in the audience, they'll be attracted by, you know, one of the schools.
Yes.
And so then they'll follow that. It's just which school, the imaginatory situation that they're presenting most pleases you know, your condition of mind.
Yes. Yes.
And so you take it up.
Yes.
Is something yes. So that's all. It's like in the material world. What do you do? What do you want? What do you do for fun? Where do you go? You know what I'm saying? So different people have different things, what they do. Someone just wants to sit with family and friends. Someone wants to go out and travel. Someone wants to go to some place where it's all, you know, happening. You know, like big, like, what do you call it? Ibiza or something, you know, or like that. You know, something that's going on. That's, you know, somebody wants to go to that peaceful, out of the way, go out into the forest where there's nothing, you know, like this. So everybody has their idea that this will make me happy. And in this way, you have philosophy. So, of philosophies, material philosophies, then these six, you can say, are the primary philosophies, the building blocks of mundane philosophy. And then from there, you can take elements of whichever one you like and put it together however you like. It's mix and match, you know. So, you know, whatever you want, you know. Is that
freedom?
Yeah, they have that freedom, yeah. Like that.
But the more we have mix and matches, the more it is easy to defeat these philosophies.
The more?
Mix and match. The more it is easy to defeat these philosophies.
The more you mix it, the more it's easy to defeat. Yes, because it's means philosophically it is, because they'll have less to back it up. These ones take it all the way up to primary creation. Yes. That's where their philosophy falls apart. Up to that point, generally they're all fairly good. As long as the goal that they're offering is what you want. You want either karma or liberation. You know, or mystic power, whatever it is that you're wanting. Then you can get. But they all fall apart when you get to the primary creation, because they don't have a proper sambandhagyan. They don't understand the jiva, the Lord, and the material energy. They have a partial understanding. And a slight partial understanding of the Lord. Is that something? Yeah.
Yes.
So they'll all fall apart. Now, the difficulty is people who will follow these philosophies will probably have more of a sadhana, more be more fixed, more be logical in their thought process, so that it'll be harder to defeat them. But once you did, they probably tend to be more convinced of this, this presentation. And then they would possibly take it up. Well, those, the more they mix and match, it's more about themselves. They're the authority. Because at least here, they're taking their acharya as their authority in the Vedic literature. But when you're taking other things, then it's they've made it up, or who knows, they picked from this guru, that guru. You know, that's how you kind of put it together. And so then you have your life philosophy. You know, it's like people get together and someone espouses something, and other ones, oh, that's very nice. And I also, you know, saw that, and I have this philosophy. And then if they're philosophically minded, that's what they do for, that's their recreation. Sitting around at the table, and in this case, probably drinking some wine. And probably red wine, and then they will discuss these things. And if it's too early in the day, then if it's really early, then it might be coffee.
Right? It can be in France.
Huh?
It can be in France.
Yes, it can be. Because otherwise, where else would they do that? If it was somewhere else, it'd be a beer, right? Is that? Yes? Okay, Shri Govinda Basya. Siddhanta, the word va indicates and. The word unfit from the last sutra is understood. Right? So it said the last one said it's unfit. Right? And so in this one, then it has va in it. Meaning this is also unfit. You know, it's just like Prabhupada said. Someone asked him, what do you think of Ramakrishna? He says, I don't think. Or what about Vivekananda? He's also a rascal. So it's like that. So it's just, it connects it. So the va here connects it to the previous unfit.
Yeah. You had mentioned about the sutras which are connected to each other.
Yes, this yes.
Is what it is.
Yes. So this is that run where you have a main sutra and then others that connect to it. Because you have so many points to be made. The main point's been made, and then you show the various variations and how they're connected.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Like that.
However, the previous sutra was a closing for the Sankhya, and this is the opening for the Vaisheshika.
Okay. But it'll have this the same kind of principle.
Yes.
Is that they're all bogus. Like that. Their whole theory with single atoms and double atoms, Hrashva, parimandalabhyam, forming into the triple atom, mahadirgavat, is untenable. Like the appearance of earth and other elements from a combination of single atoms into double atoms into triple, and triple atoms into quadruple atoms. Their other procedures are also contradictory. It is not logical to say that the double atoms with parts arise from atoms with no further divisible parts. Right? So, does that make sense? So when you put the double atom together, now it has parts, but before that it's indivisible, does not? Because if you take two indivisibles and put them together, it's still one indivisible.
Yes.
Right? What is it? One indivisible with liberty and justice for all. Right? does that make sense? Okay. So, that's the whole point, is you can't make something out of nothing. Right?
Yeah. They're trying to.
They're trying.
Yes.
What's that problem? Is that why they want to do that?
Because there's something from the Shastra that'll say that the atom has no dimension, it's the smallest. They've defined that it has no dimension at all. We won't say that. We just say it's the smallest particle of material nature.
So can we say that they are Buddhist in a sense?
Basically,
because it's called,
like, if you're not Vaishnav, everybody's a variety of Buddhist. It's just whether they base their Buddhism on the Vedic literatures or not. Because then, as soon as you get rid of God, what do you have left? Because God being everything, so to not have God involved to that degree, especially here in creation. Not that we're not saying God doesn't exist. But then the difficulty comes up is that if you remove God, then you, by that logic, you'd have a void, since he's everything. But the problem that comes up is they don't even understand, for there to even be a void, that would have to be God to allow that. That there'd have to be a potency of voidness to allow a void to be there. Like that. So you can't have anything without him. Like that. But, you know, Buddhists are specifically Buddhists. But we see is that with Shankaracharya bringing the Buddhists back into the Vedic, society, then he has to establish Buddhist conclusions from Vedic literature. And so then you're going to see especially any of these, so that's the Mayavad philosophy, and you'll find most all what's going on these days, they're all varieties of Mayavad.
Yes.
So if we use Mayavad as a general thing, just meaning impersonalist, then basically you can say all the six schools are, in one sense, Mayavadis. So it's just six different aspects. But of them, those who are followers of Vedanta, those would be the most difficult Mayavadis to deal with. Because right, they'll have the most consistent philosophy. So, like that. So the farther it goes down, the less they deal. Like Nyaya, it's just if you're logic and you see everything, then you can understand what's truth and not truth, and this way come to the proper understanding and free yourself from the material world. So they don't use basically anything beyond logic, you know, and if some fundamental knowledge to apply that logic with. Right? Then with Kannada, then you add in the atoms. Does that make sense? Yeah. So somehow or another, I guess he felt it was important that, how you say, Uncle Fester was there howling on the roof or something. He had to add that to the philosophy. Right?
But those are the scientists, modern days.
Yes. Means you'll see between these ones and the Shankya, that it kind of covers the aspects of the modern kind of scientist, because yoga is too esoteric because it includes the mind. They can't deal with that. Then logic, they don't mind the logic. They want things to be logical, but they don't necessarily use the 16, you know, padarthas of Gotama to establish. So they'll have a lot of fallacious logic. You know, so it still has the unseen aspect of the mind being the final conclusion, but they try to distract everyone else's attention from that. Right? Because as individuals with a personality, they're not very high on the list. So their claim to fame is being intelligent. So they kind of have to put the mind aside. So even if anybody's better, then they'll just say that's subjective, because that just immediately throws them out and You know what I'm saying? So it's, yeah. So you can see all the various kinds of everything will be found in these six. And then you'll find people will take aspects of these. Not that they've studied these, because the mode of nature, to explain this, the modes of nature, they influence the living entity. They control the living entity. So those with a particular mindset, then they'll be attracted by one of these six philosophies. And so therefore then the lead, person in each philosophy has documented their understanding, but it's still controlled by the modes. Their ability to think so deeply and then write their sutras based on that. Right? So, all it is it's the same modes of nature that others, even who are not following the Vedic culture, then being in contact with these particular combinations of the modes, they come up with particular philosophies. So it's revealed. It's not that it was always there. In the Vedic, these six are always there. Then there's a personality that's connected to it who reveals it. Is that the difference?
Yeah. The contemporary chemistry that we study, you know, about the atomic formulas and the molecular formulas, is based on Vaisheshik. And from where does it begin then? Because
means is there philosophy? Is the modern atomic theory based on Vaisheshika? You can say it's by the modes of nature. It's dealing in the same area, the same kind of concept, but it's not that they've studied Vaisheshika itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, there's a good chance they haven't done that. Does that make sense? Because, you know, before they even understood kind of what atoms are, you know, I think if you go back to when they were interested in Vedic literature in the late, you know, the early 1800s, then I think it was more from dust thou art, dust thou will be. So that's about as small as you get. I think atoms came up a bit later.
So then when you say over here that when Vaisheshik says that we have a single atom, then we have the double atoms, and then the triple atom, and the quadruple atom. So if you happen to, you know, compare this with the modern chemistry, then at which level does it begin, you know, the modern people? Maybe the single, double? Because single is very microscopic, right?
Yeah, but that means, but what's the point?
The point is that I just want to know that they're getting so much of success, you know, although they're not...
They're getting success because of the modes of nature. The modes change, nobody cares for them anymore. Does that make sense? That's all. It's just like... Today there's a celebrity and they're you know, the cats meow, and then tomorrow someone else is a celebrity or they do something stupid. You know what I'm saying? What was it? That one of that, you know, really big guy, it happened some time ago. One of the big main guys in Bollywood, and then he was out driving his car at night or something, one of his fancy cars, his Ferrari or something, and then hit somebody, killed somebody. Like that. And then after that, then that's it. He's not in any movies, he's not this, no, he's not in any shows, nobody cares anymore. No? Like that. You know, so it's just like that. It's just the modes of nature. So they'll say they're starting from the single atom and building, but the atom is undivisible. So what's there now is divisible, right? Because you have the nucleus, you have the protons, the neutrons, and they keep finding more and more stuff that's there. So that means the atom is smaller than what they're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So that's all. You can't say where they're starting because... Yeah. Yes.
How much is the jiva involved in this place for... different philosophies?
How much are they involved?
How much is the jiva involved?
But what do you mean by involved? And how, what do you mean by how much?
There is the material
A jiva, I kind of get the idea. But, you know, you don't have to go into that one.
The material nature is kind of... You said there's like different combinations of the three modes.
Right.
And that is covering the jiva. And then that's why the jiva has this taste for...
Yes.
But how much is the jiva involved once that covering is there? And how much is there?
So is this a question about free will or predestiny? Okay, so yeah. That means that it means by the previous action you get certain choices. What choices they choose now, that produces the next next predestiny. And then on that, you always have free will to do with what you like with predestiny.
Hmm. How big is the possibility that you will actually change
what?
To some other case for other three modes.
100%. Because you're here since time immemorial, jivas being feminine are going to get bored, so they have to keep changing. Right? So it's constantly changing.
So then if they hear the Vaishnava philosophy, then that's at that point when one can really get out of this.
Yeah, that's the time when you can get out of the process. Otherwise, you'll be in samsara forever. Unless you come in contact with the bona fide devotees, you won't get out. There's no question of getting out. Because you can't get out by using what's inside. Like that. You can only get out by using what's outside. Does that make sense? Okay. It is not logical to say that the double atoms with parts arise from atoms with no further divisible parts. For one sees a cloth with parts formed from combination of threads with parts and with six sides. Therefore, atoms must have parts, divisibility. Right? Because the fabric is made from threads. Right? And the threads themselves have parts. Right? Because the thread's not a single strand. The thread is, you've put together. But even that, it comes from one strand. So one strand has divisibility, but also has, dimension. Then you put, let's say, is the strand three of those together, then you get a thread. And then you weave these threads together in the two ways, then you get you get dimensions from that. So you get, the six sides. We understand the six sides of a piece of fabric? No. Okay, let's take a square piece of fabric. Right? You have the two ends and the top and the four sides. Right? Then you have the upper, what you're looking at, and then the part on the other side. So you'll get six. Does that make sense? So every piece of fabric, if it's, just regular how it's meant, then has six sides. If you cut it and that, then you end up with a few more sides. But you just say, just showing the fabric itself, because the threads are going the two different directions, and from that being together, then that creates the six sides. So you get six sides from two threads, that themselves have divisibility that go down, but everything has dimension all the way from the smallest thing up. So to say is that you're going to start with something with no dimension. And therefore, then, when two of those non-dimensional entities come together, now you have dimension. How does that work? Mm-hmm. You can't start with two nothings, and now you have a something. Mm-hmm. If that was there, then every poor man would be rich. Because he has nothing, and he just takes something else of nothing and puts that together, and now he has something. Yeah?
Because
simple.
We don't understand that. Two atoms, when they come together, there has to be a point of contact, and therefore that part is important. Because
they have to. There has to be a contact, but the point is you're taking the two dimensional. You're taking two things that they say have no dimension. So if they have no dimension, how do you define where they contact?
That's what they can't define that.
But there's no dimension anyway. Even if you just took all those points of contact, will that produce anything? So that means then everything's made out of the points of contact, not the atoms. So since they're saying it's the atoms, then the point of contact won't happen either. That means that's, it also from that aspect. You understand? Don't take that as the main argument. You have to take that there's no dimension.
Yes, got it.
Okay. Otherwise, even by combining 1,000 atoms, double or triple or bigger size, could never form because they would have no size, since the atom is without dimension in their theory. Right? Means in our, we understand it has dimension. Therefore, we'll say there's a single atom, then it becomes the double, then two double atoms, you become with six, and then it grows like that. That's our philosophy. They're trying to take the same thing, now apply that there's no dimension. Right? So it's not that the problem that atoms don't build things. The problem is that their definition doesn't work. Right? Larger effects do not necessarily arise from larger material causes. That idea is mental speculation. Even if this idea were accepted, still, for the double atoms to have parts, the atoms would need to have different parts, and those parts would need to have further parts, and those parts too would need to have parts to infinity, right? So then the problem comes. Because they're saying is that by putting together, now there's parts, now you can build. But since there's nothing, then you can't have anything. But if you're saying no, but it has substance, that means then what they're from has to have parts, and have parts, and they'll just keep going. Right? Because you're not taking that the atoms are the origin of themselves. Right? God, there's no infinite regression because he is the source of everything. That's what makes him who he is. Right? And then the material, because you have time and space, therefore then you have to worry about infinite regression. But with him, since he's unlimited, there's no question of infinite regression. As each object would have unlimited atoms, Meru and the mustard seed would be the same size. Because they all have unlimited. So then that's the problem with this, because then you end up, they would both be the same size. Since nothing bigger than a Paramanu can be produced. Thus, the idea that large triple atoms arrive from small double atoms, which in turn arrive from dimensionless single atoms, is empty talk. The sutra should not be explained as a refutation of objects concerning the author's own propositions, since this part of the chapter deals with refuting other points of view. Right? So, we're just dealing with this particular point. Don't use it somewhere else. Right? So that's important. Does that make sense? Some points being given in one place, don't interpolate it onto something else. Just use it in that area, because in the other areas, there's other ways to discuss it. Right? Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.11, 1-5. The material manifestation's ultimate particle, which is indivisible and not formed into a body, is called the atom. So our point is it's smallest because it's indivisible. It exists always as an invisible entity, even after the dissolution of all forms. The material body is but a combination of such atoms, but it is misunderstood by the common man. Atoms are the ultimate state of the manifest universe. When they stay in their own forms without forming different bodies, they are called the unlimited oneness. They are certainly different bodies than physical forms, but the atoms themselves form the complete manifestation. One can estimate time by measuring the movement of the atomic combination of bodies. Time is the potency of the Almighty Personality of Godhead. Right? So it's his potency, time. But now you can measure time in the material platform by the movement of these atoms. Right, so that means it can be defined that way. It's bigger than us because we have to understand we're dealing with something much bigger foot than ourselves. So, of all the aspects of time, anything below 1/11th of a second generally is something we can't personally perceive. If you use instruments and all that, then you can go beyond that. But it has to be instruments that are able to be applied within the context that we do things. Does that make sense? You know, like let's say, just for example, you do the things where they're having a race, and one beats the other by less than a tenth of a second. We can't see that. But what they'll do is in slow motion, then they'll stop at the point, and then we can see it. So, in other words, that point has to be there longer than 1/11th of a second for us to see it. So you can say, no, see, we're seeing less. No, you're not. You're still only seeing that much. Because otherwise, if you saw, why didn't you see anyway? You have to slow it down to be able to see it. So that's the whole point, is that we have limitations. So anything below our time, we can't see. And anything above our time, we can't see. So all the different kinds of years and that there are, we can only deal with a few of them. Right? We can deal with the sun, the moon, the Sibyl, and I think Jupiter. Those are the only years we can deal with. Does that make sense? Above that, you know, what the demigods, what the Prajapatis, what Brahma's dealing with, we can't, the forefathers, we can't deal with those. Not that we can't calculate it, it's just beyond our scope. And what's smaller than what we're perceiving, that amount of time also. So we know about these from Shastra. And so knowing that, then you can say you know time. When you know from the atom up to Lord Brahma, then you can say now you know time. But that's just material time. Because time is Krishna's energy. He's beyond. So when he comes into the universe, then he functions like this. So, yeah. Time is the potency of the almighty personality of Godhead, Hari, who controls all physical movement, although he is not visible in the physical world. It means the Lord controls the whole material phenomena through time, though you can't see Krishna. Atomic time is measured according to its covering a particular atomic space. That's actual atomic time. Like the modern atomic time actually just means that they just established there's a time, and then all scientists adjust their time to that atomic time. You never seen atomic time? Because I remember seeing one, observatory. You know, next to where they observe things, they have the clock with the atomic time in it. Mm-hmm. Because you have to be able to say at this time, and then all of them can calculate from there. Mm-hmm. Like that. But here, the atomic time means actually the time it takes for the movement of one atom. You know, so it's a bit smaller, a bit more fine than the atomic time we're using. Just like the atom we're using is not actually fully an atom, right? That time which covers the unmanifest aggregate of atoms is called the great time. The division of gross time is calculated as follows. Two atoms make one double atom. Three double atoms makes a hexatom. This hexatom is visible in the sunshine which enters through the holes in a window screen. Like sometimes you see that little bit of light coming in and like you can see that. That's the size of these hexatom. Yeah, like that. Things like that. One can clearly see the hexatom goes up towards the sky. Yeah, because you always see it's when it's there, they're always going, the dust is always going up. It's always moving up, it's not going down. So it's there. It's just that, yeah. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains the partition of matter from the smallest Paramanu to the largest Parama Mahan. The presence of this invisible, partless Paramanu to the human eye is established systematically by the visibility of Trisharenu, composed of parts. Right, so the hexatom, I think, is the Trisharenu.
Hexatom is the Trisharenu.
Hmm? Yes. The time required by the sun to pass the form of matter, either small or big, determines the partition of time, which correspondingly also small or big. Right, so it's all defined upon the sun to pass over this mountain.
Okay. There is a relation between the time and the space.
Yes. Yeah, they go together. Because you're measuring time by how much space is covered. So the space that we're using then is the space the size of an atom. And then from that, then we're moving. Because less than that, then what do you need? We don't. Because what can be less than the atom? Right? Nothing. It means Krishna can be smaller than the atom. But then he's transcendental, so that won't work for our material time. Finding the nature of subtle time difficult to describe, Maitreya first describes the division of matter. The smallest division, charama, of parts of material elements is called the paramanu. Why is charama used in the singular? Indicating only one particle when there are many. Though the particles are many, to understand about the subtle nature of time, it is appropriate to isolate one particle, and thus the singular is used, right? When you're going to measure time from the smallest amount, then you're going to take one single atom, even though atoms are all in a group, right? Like that. There's all, you know, all so many of that, so you can't say, you don't, you have a singular Earth atom, but the point is Earth is atoms. It's not that there's one. There is, what are you standing on? Right? Yeah?
But how can we take only one atom?
No, but he's saying just for that's what he's saying. Atoms are always caught as plural. But in here, then they're taking one, charama, meaning just one so you can measure time.
Yes.
Right? It's just like, gets, as a general continent, gets benefit for having invented the djembe, which then now the devotees are using. Okay, let us say we take some potatoes, we cut them up, we drop them into some boiling oil, boil them for a while, take them out for a little bit, let them rest, then put them back into hotter oil for a short time, right? Then put them on a plate. So, they're known as plural, right? But now if I want to make a point about it, I pick up one, and I make my whole soliloquy based on this one fry. Does that make sense? Though they always come as a group. So the same way, atoms always come in a group, but just to a measure time, then we say one.
Yes. Can we say that those atoms we're talking about in a group, they are eternal as long as the material creation exists?
No, they're eternal.
Always.
Because material nature is eternal. It's just its manifestation is temporary.
But when we say, for example, this column, it will be destroyed in a duplex.
Yeah, but the atoms that are there will just go back into the earth element.
Yes.
The atoms will always be there. We don't put so much emphasis on that, because the point is that the material nature as an energy of the Lord is eternal, but its manifestation from the aspect of pradhan into the mahat, that will come and go, according to the breathing and glance of Mahavishnu. But its existence is eternal. But the elements of the primary and secondary creation, those are manifest and unmanifest. Of that, the primary creation, it's always done in that way. So you can say that blueprint, that's the way it's always done. So that's eternal. But the particular manifestations that are there, though they're based on that original blueprint, then according to the karma of the jivas, that's what's going to be manifest at any particular time. But it's not happening like here by proximity and this and that. It's happening by the will of the Lord. And then with his potency, then it all happens. But the atoms themselves aren't going away. Just like the jivas, they're eternal. They're not going away.
But the atom, if they are eternal, they are spiritual.
No. It means it's spiritual means if you're looking at from the one, they're all Brahman. It means the material energy is Brahman, jivas are Brahman, the internal potency is Brahman, and Krishna is Brahman. The Krishna is the supreme Brahman of all these Brahmans.
Yes.
because everything's coming from him, so it's all Brahman. So you can say it's spiritual. That means in that it's not material. Mm-hmm. But what makes things material is our perspective, is that they are functioning separate from the Lord. That's why we call it material. So all those with that consciousness are placed here, where then that manifestation is temporary. Right? And so we call it the material world. But actually the material energy is eternal. It's Brahman. That's why someone like Sukadeva Goswami, he sees everything as Brahman. There is no material world. There's the temporary manifestation of the external energy of the Lord. But it's all Brahman anyway, because what else can it be made out of?
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
My friend speaks of charma vayu, a single atom, in the calculation of time. So it is the smallest space that is being speaking of, spoken of, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And then, because time has been used, even time is equally subtle as this is subtle. So.
I don't understand what we're discussing.
Basically, you're measuring time.
You're measuring time by the movement of the sun over a single atom. And then from that up to a double atom, then up to a triple, you know, like this, and building from there. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. So that's all described, I think, in the third canto.
Yes.
I heard that I once heard that the jiva, that the material nature are actually just jivas.
Material nature is just jivas.
But they are unmanifest, something like that.
And you heard this from someone who their background was New Age?
No, something like it when I just joined.
That's what I'm meaning. They, before they joined, they were... Because otherwise, if you weren't New Age before, you'd never come up with this one. So someone who deals with the elementals and all this and that. Point is, there's jivas everywhere. They're all pervading. But at the same time, there's a difference between the jiva and the atoms of the material energy. The atoms of material energy, you have 24 elements themselves. The jivas aren't part of that. They get covered by those things. But it's not that they are the earth and they are the sky and the elements and that and that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I wouldn't get into that.
They do?
Some. Not many. You have to be really out there to deal with stuff like this. Sorry? Yes. I mean, medication also helps like that, you know, various, I say, herbal substances and all that, they help a lot. That's for realization. That'd be for understanding, no, but for realization.
For seeing jivas everywhere.
Yeah? So there's jivas everywhere, yeah. That's right. Though the particles are many, to understand about the subtle nature of time, it is appropriate to isolate one particle, and thus the singular is used. But still, the one particle should by its nature be either combined or uncombined. The verse, therefore, says it is not joined. Right? So, in any case, it's a singular. So even if you're saying a single, a double, a tris tarneno, it has to be a singular one of those.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
But here it's saying it's unjoined. That's how you start the measurement of time. So it'll be a singular atom. Right?
Mm.
This particle is understood to be the Paramanu. This means it cannot be seen. Then what is its size? From these particles which arise, men make a mistake concerning what constitutes a single particle. One perceives the very small particles of life, which are seen in the rays of the sun, shining through a lattice window, and thinks, here is one particle. Here is another fine particle. The sixth part of that light particle is a paramanu, but it is invisible. Right? So what you're seeing, the paramanu is 1/6 of that.
Yes.
Right? Men are mentioned because some small insects, the size of a Trisarenu, can see this particle. The Paramanu has been described as the smallest particle. So in other words, these small insects, the size of a Trisarenu, they can see Trisarenus, and they can see all these things.
They can see
Paramanu. It doesn't say specifically.
Can see this particle. This particle is Paramanu that is being spoken of. Trisarenu is what we see.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, so then some, if you're that size of a Trisarenu, then you should be able to see, because probably your foot's the size that, you know, like that. Now the great state of matter is described. The state of oneness, kaivalyam, of the Paramanu, of the particles of matter, sata, which is its state previous to transformation into the condition of pralaya, is called paramamahan. It is in the masculine to agree with the word paramanu. How can all objects which are mutually different with various qualities become one? There is no sense of distinct qualities, avisheshaha, and no sense of different particles or objects, nirantaraha. It is the totality of matter, right? So pradan is just all of it together. So that's the paramamahan. So when it breaks apart, then you get the paramanu, and everything's made out of that, but then when it goes back to its natural balanced state, it goes back into pradan.
Yes.
Right? And that's the paramamahan. You can't distinguish. It's just one big monster, you know, atom.
Maris is paramanu, it's the atom.
The singular, indivisible.
Yes. Yes.
And when you put all of those together in one place, then you get the paramamahan. And he says it's in the masculine, even though it's pradan, which is feminine, just to agree with paramanu.
Yes.
Right?
Can we say that whatever holds them together is the jumnas?
Yes.
Law of attraction?
Yes. But it's Krishna's energy, so its energy is all together. But then when you separate it into the indivisible atoms, then you have to be able to put them together to make things. But as an energy, it's still all one. But to make variety of things, then it has to be divided into the atoms. The Lord has to enter it as attraction to get them to go together so you can actually make something.
Yes.
Right? It'd be really hard to make chapati out of flour if you could never get it to stick together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That is the meaning of paramamahan. Time can be understood in a matter similar to the existence of very fine and very great particles of matter. How do these extreme dimensions arise? By pervading bhuktya through the finest and greatest states of matter, samstana, by his shakti, the Supreme Lord, by nature unseen, avyakta, limits the whole universe, vyakta bhuk. There's another aspect of avyakta, the unseen. When he pervades it all, vibhu. Vibhu can also mean that he is skillful in matters of creation and other acts. This verse explains the phrase, quote, by pervading the smallest and largest elements, samstana bhuktya. Right, so it's by his shakti, he pervades it. That's what's why it holds together.
In what sense it says limits the whole universe?
Limits. By a shakti, it limits the whole universe, because then you get the size of the universe in that. So he's avyakta, means you have, by his glance, then the pradhan has transformed. So now, even though it's transformed, the 24 elements are there, it's unseen. Right? So therefore, it's just, so to make it so it functions, then Krishna enters it, so he's the one that's unseen. That's why it functions in that state. Does that make sense? And so then, being in that now as Mahat, then it can have the diversity of the variety of the creation. Then you're going to take that, so they're limited, each one of them. What variety is each one, its volume and everything like that. Then that's applied into the Jaihosar.
Early start,
whatever. No, we should finish at 7:45. Oh, okay. Okay, you'll be here?
I have a class at 8.
Oh, okay, 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 okay.
So I'll be leaving here about 5:02.
Okay. Paramandalus. Yes, and so everything's limited there. So we can say with the Mahat, then you say everything's limited. And then within the Mahat, then you have the individual universes, which, you know, have a particular size. Then within that, the coverings, they all have size. Within that, the 14 planetaries have a size. Everything has a size. Everything's limited.
So we can say that this is the work of Brahma.
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 Only when you get inside the universe. Before that, the whole Mahat, that's before Brahma. So that would be Hiranyagarbha. Vishnu in that mood of I'm the creator. Right? But he's entered that. Why it even starts is because of that aspect of Sada Shiva, because of the false understanding, the false ego. So the jiva's false ego time, they enter. Because of that, you can see it's based on the actually destructive element. So if you create something based on destruction, it's not going to last. You know what I'm saying? So that's what it's made with. So it's natural it's going to fall apart. So we can say, Shiva is stronger than Brahma because it's built to fall apart. That's how it's made.
We need to accept.
Yes, we have to accept that it's... Yeah, so if there's false egos, means it will fall apart.
Yes.
And if we're seeing it in relation to Krishna, as a servant of Krishna, then the effect, that doesn't have to fall apart.
Yes.
We'll always have the benefit. The situation we're in may fall apart, but that consciousness won't.
Yes.
But if we deal doing something that's devotional, but with false ego, then you can see it's destined to destruction.
Yes.
Means that run of it going very nicely will have to stop because it's based on false ego.
Yes.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Is it because it's the wrong attitude or mentality?
Yes, but it's, what we're meaning is that ignorance is coming from Shiva is the Lord of ignorance, and it's ignorance, the false ego, and then the jivas and time, which is entering into pradhan, the Lord's glance. So that's beginning the creation, but we're beginning creation on the foundation of ignorance. Therefore, it will be destroyed.
I just mean that the jiva comes into the material world in that situation because of the already it's kind of wrong, the mentality. So that's why
the mentality is material, yes.
Yeah. So then everything kind of always goes wrong because it's...
Yes, it goes wrong because it's based on ignorance.
Yeah.
Like that. So that's the whole point. The material creation is based on ignorance.
Yeah.
And because of that, everything goes wrong. So when you base it on Krishna, then everything will start to go right. But right means it's connected to Krishna.
Yes.
It means the material world to go on the way it goes on. So you're running two things at once. Material world, how it's unfolding, and the spiritual development. So even though the material world's falling apart, you're getting the spiritual benefit and being uplifted in that same process.
Yes.
So? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay? Okay, he's unseen, so the Lord is inside everything, but then he pervades it all so that we can, then there's the size of everything, vibhu. He's skillful in matters of creation and other acts. So creating it, maintaining it, destroying all these different things that Krishna is doing. So he's vibhu. That time which elapses for the sun to pass over the form of the Paramanu, Paramanu Tam, is called the Paramanu time. This will be understood from the explanation in relation to the planets and constellations in verse 13. What time it takes for the sun to cross over a Paramanu is called a Paramanu time, or the smallest division of time. That time which pervades the whole material realm without distinction, Avishesha Bhuk, right? Because it's also, again, you can't... You can't, it's unseen. Time's unseen.
Yes.
You can get symptoms of it, but you can't see time.
Yes. Yes.
You can see the symptoms of time, but you can't see time. Time in the form of the sun, by expenditure of years and yugas, right? So then by that, then time in the form of the sun we can see.
Yes.
Starting with the creation and ending with the dissolution of the universe is called Parama Mahan time, the big time.
Yes.
Since there is an equivalent name given to the divisions of time and the material particles of Paramanu, Anu and Trisarenu, or Trasarenu, there are also equivalent name given to the time and the material substance called Parama Mahan. However, there is difference in the terminologies and sizes of time and objects between these extremes. Right? So when you change the context that you're dealing in, then much of the time the scripture will use a different vocabulary. You know what I'm saying? The same principle is being applied in an area. And being applicable to that area, you have a vocabulary to describe all the various aspects. But when you apply the same principle in another area, another body of knowledge, then to match that application, it gets different names. Otherwise, it's the same thing. Everything is working on Krishna and his potencies and on the same formulas. Right? But as you change areas of application, then it also changes the names you give because the shape it will take will be different. Does that make sense?
It is always like that.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you see, even we do that. Does that make sense? Like you have the principle of how a car runs and how a bicycle runs are the same.
Yes.
But it's a bicycle and a car or an automobile. It's not a chatur cycle. You know,
yes.
Or a bicar. You know what I'm saying? It's just it changes because of the technologies seems to be different, but it's the same. You're applying energy in a force that gets applied to the wheels and it moves forward.
Yes.
Is that?
Yes.
So we just change bicycle, motorcycle. You know, it starts to change. And sometimes you have the names will be different. Some things will be the same, but other things may be different. Right. Yeah. However, there is a difference in the terminologies and sizes of time and objects between these extremes. Two paramanus make one anu. Three anus make one trasarenu. The trasarenu can be perceived. It can be known as it follows after the air because of its lightness and the rays of the sun entering through a lattice. Another version has natu gam agat. It does not go to the earth. It remains moving about. What is the evidence of the anu and paramanu?
Here it says Trisharenu and there it says Trasharenu. It's the same thing?
Yeah, it's one and the same.
Mm. Oh, okay. Same. Trisharenu, Trasharenu. The Trisharenu is the evidence. It is a common rule that without having dense and numerous parts, the possessor of the parts cannot be seen. The Trisharenu is the possessor of parts, with three gross anus as its parts. However, the paramanus are not gross at all. Solidity involves many objects. Thus, the grossness of the anu depends on the paramanu, right? So, you have one paramanu, you put two paramanus together, you get an anu,
yes.
Right? You put together three anus, then you get a trisarenu.
Yes.
Right? This proves the existence of the paramanu.
Can we say that since it is the trisarenu, trasarenu can be perceived, can we say this is a moment?
I'm not sure. It might be.
What is the question?
Yeah.
He's wondering if the Nimisha, by definition, if you're using the atomic time, is it the Trisarenu? like that. Yeah. That's the whole point, because that it's the smallest perceivable time. Because it'll be described here, I think, according to the atoms, but in other places it'll be described according to the blink of an eye. Because the blink of an eye is something we can see and measure ourselves. Yes. The other one is that you can perceive it if the conditions are right.
Yes. Which one we usually do accept?
Generally means when we're dealing with time, when we're using time with activities that we're performing, we'll connect it with the blink of an eye.
Yes.
But because you're dealing with atomic time, it'll take it up through the atoms up to a particular point.
And the regular time that we see?
That's something. Because we're saying 1 second, if you divide it into 11 parts, then you get a nimisha.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like that. So generally our clocks, I mean, unless you had a really big clock, then you could maybe get it. But okay, so this depends on the Paramanu. This proves the existence of the Paramanu. Right? Because you can see something that's made out of.
Yes.
The visibility of the Trisarenu is not possible without solid parts. Right? Because if you're saying it has no dimensions,
yes,
you can't do it because it has to have solid parts. Otherwise, why would you see the Trisarenu?
Mm-hmm.
Making the Anu solid requires only two Paramanus, not three or four. Using the logic of accepting the first possibility, just as Jaimini argues that three partridges are the minimum requirement for sacrifice. So a minimum of three Anus produces density so that the Trisarenu can be seen. Sardarta Darshani 3:11-1-5. Right? So then you're going to say that there's density. It means before that they are solid, but you'll get density when you put together six Paramanus. Right? Or three Anus. Right? Or one Trisarenu, however you like to look at it.
Yeah.
We have this, when we have these clocks set time, then it's like, it's 10, the second is divided into 10.
Right.
So it's that difference from this 11th second that we're talking about now?
It's 10, and then the 11th is a touch more than, smaller than that.
Mm. It's divided differently.
It's just means because they're using the metric and all that, then they like to, or it's just easier, they divide everything by 10. We use a 10-based mathematical system, so they just divide it by 10.
Mm.
You know, it's just like, I think the Chinese were using a base 8, so they would divide everything by 8.
Okay.
You know, so it's just that they're using 10 because of that, but the actual time is the 11th of a second.
Mm-hmm.
So it has nothing to do with their watches. Just it happens to coincide. Yes. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaurakumari.